to the Red Caps Podcast, a podcast where we dip our caps into the blood of our listeners and we ramble on about old school games. In today's episode, we are going to talk about Kickstarters. But since I've never ran one, I brought a friend in to help me out and answer all my questions. Remember, no mortal can outrun a Red Cap. So as always, I hope you can sit back, listen, and enjoy. Listeners to the show have likely heard Chris from Direct Sun either on his previous episode where he was on here and we were talking about puzzle dungeons, or he has called in several times and left voicemails, and I've answered those on the call on the show as well. He's a wonderful guest, great guy. I had a blast having this chat with him, and I think you'll have a blast listening to it. So buckle it up, and I will hand it off to past me and past Chris as we talk about Kickstarters. Take it away. Ladies and gentlemen, I am joined by Direct Sun. He's returning to the podcast. He didn't get scared away. Direct Sun, how are you doing today?
Hey, doing all right. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
That's great. So, Chris, I invited you back because I wanted to have a discussion with you about Kickstarter. You've successfully ran a couple of Kickstarters now, and I was hoping you'd be able to enlighten somebody like myself who has never ran a Kickstarter about what the process is like and that whole thing. But before we get into the Kickstarter process, in case people hadn't heard the previous episode that you were on or aren't aware of who you are, what are these two awesome Kickstarters that you've ran, and what are they all about?
Yeah, so they're about adventure modules. So I like to say that they're system neutral. You can run them with pretty much any OSR system, but I haven't slapped on any label really on them. No OSR label, no OSE label. But yeah, you can really use it with any BX or OSR system with minimal conversion. And I like to call them OSR style puzzles. So kind of like OSR style challenges, except more puzzly. And I kind of have explored what that kind of means to me, but you can have really bad puzzles and you can have really engaging puzzles that are a lot of fun for the table. And I like to think that these are the latter.
And each of the two ones had kind of a very distinct theme about them, right? So the first one was eyeballs. Everything was eyeballs. And the most latest one is more reflections and mirrors and that sort of thing. I guess that kind of plays into how you approach your puzzles in by keeping them very themed so that the player can, once they understand what the theme is, the puzzles start to make more and more sense as soon as they've realized what that theme is that's going on.
Yeah, one of the main things that I try and get in there is the theme. Teaching the mechanics of the world is important in OSR style puzzles. If you look at Goblin Punch, the post on OSR style challenges, there's a few things that they go over on what those kind of are defined as. And one of them is not a necessity to have system mastery. And I take that to mean like knowing exactly what your class would do, knowing the system itself, kind of gaming it in order to get past the challenge. And while OSR style puzzles don't rely on system mastery, they rely on game mechanics mastery, world mastery of what you're learning and going through. So ideally you incrementally up the ante for the player and say the world kind of works a little bit like this, and as they explore a little bit more they learn more and they say, oh, I wonder if this will work, which encourages that interactivity, that experimentation, and eventually what we're going for is that aha moment, that eureka feeling at the table that you get when you solve a puzzle and you are the master of the mechanics, you know how this works. And then it's really fun to sometimes subvert those expectations and say, you thought you knew how this worked, but let's turn your world on your head. So that's always really fun at the table when you get that feeling.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on the whole ramping up the world knowledge and understanding what's happening in the world. And there's few feelings that are better than the being able to go, oh, I called that, I knew that, and having that you know payoff of what you thought was going to happen is what happened, and you feel smart because you figured it out. And it's there's times where the player comes up with the better solution for not necessarily for a puzzle dungeon, but just for a challenge in general. And it's like,
yeah, that's better than what I had. So that's what it was. And then they feel like a genius because they solved the issue. It was like, yeah, you created the solution.
Absolutely. So. We're playing TTRPGs. They should be able to try anything. And if it makes sense, it works. You exactly. Let them break it.
So right now, we're at the beginning of the year. We're at the beginning of 2023. And a bunch of people are doing all kinds of New Year's resolutions. There's folks that are, like myself, trying to lose a little bit of weight because I'm a fat slob. And then there's other folks that are doing it much more creatively and doing things like Dungeon 23 and Hex 23 or all the slash 23s and doing different zines and little things like that. Undoubtedly, some of these people are going to take their creative works and decide, hey, this looks, I think I've got something here. I'm going to go to Kickstarter. Before somebody goes to Kickstarter, what percentage of a product should they have completed before they even think about looking at the Kickstarter webpage?
So I have had different opinions on this through my two Kickstarters and now. The first Kickstarter that I launched was for Puzzle Dungeon, the Seer's Sanctum. And I had that 100% done. It was ready to print. At that point. And I felt very comfortable with that. It printed, it went through, and there was even like a few months of gap time there when I was back and forth with Mixum. I didn't really like it too much, and I got it out. It was very low stress. I highly recommend that over the way that I did it with Aberrant Reflections. Because when I launched Aberrant Reflections, I said, I can do this. I have a great idea over here. Most of the adventure is written. I've already gone through a few play tests. We're getting more over there. We have a lot of this under my belt. We're going to add on a bunch of other stuff like contributors that we're going to coordinate with. That's going to make it go a whole lot faster. And it just kind of blew my estimates out of the water, everything that came up. So I would recommend that you have it 100% done. But realistically, that's not always the case that you can have. You don't have that upfront cash to kind of fund it. Maybe you're not in the position where you want to put in your own money. You're nervous that you're not going to reach those funding goals. So you can't do that. In that case, I would recommend you have 80% of the way done. And one of the most important things is there you have like some artwork and maybe like a sample spread just so that people can get an idea of what's going on. Maybe even post a sample of rules if you're doing like a rule set or something, or one or two rooms so that people know what they're getting. There's a lot of Kickstarters that don't fulfill. And I mean, I've backed a lot of Kickstarters. I think there's maybe one or two I've been pretty lucky that haven't fulfilled that I've backed. But, you know, that's been an issue in the past and people are cognizant of that. And I think a lot of people like to try and get a 100% or project launched.
Yeah, I think getting as much of the work that you as the primary creator done as you can makes complete sense. I understand if somebody has to say, oh, I got to raise the funds so I can pay for an artist, or I need to raise the funds so I can pay for an editor. Of those sorts of things, that makes sense. But for the what is actually in your control, I agree. I think you should have the majority of that done, if for no other reason for timing, but also so that you know everything else. Because I gotta ask, one of the things that's always fascinated me is when somebody's doing a Kickstarter, especially when it's going to have a physical component to it. If it's just a pure digital PDF, it's slightly different. But when it has a physical product behind it and you're using collaborators that you're going to have to compensate in some way, how do you properly price out and calculate this before anything starts? Like what was the process of that like? Did you have like massive spreadsheets and you're going through all this, or did you kind of have an idea? Was it more like a finger in the wind, or did you have a really good, how close on your margins do you think you actually were with either one of those?
So with Seer's Sanctum, the first, crowdfunding campaign that I did, Zine Quest started up, and I was like, oh wow, I should do this. I wanted a print version. I wanted to get this out there. I'm doing it. And so as soon as February rolled around, I was like, how do I do this? And I wound up launching like a week into February. It's fine. You can launch anytime during February or release during February. That was the thing. But with Aberrant Reflections, I realized that I needed a little bit more prep time because, you know, I had all the contributors. Seer Sanctum was just me. With Aberrant Reflections, I mean, I had started the concept and everything August the year prior. And I had started contacting people after the first Kickstarter. I contacted Jacob Fleming after I saw the cover for The Shadow of Tower Silver Axe. And I was like, I want to work with you on my next product. He's like, yes, let's make that happen. So I contacted people well in advance. And I was like, what are your prices? What are you thinking at? And I say, I contacted most people well in advance. There are some people that I was like, I should really have an editor. I should really have a layout artist. but that was just my feeling on it and where I was at the time. Not that I'm saying that it's required for everything, but I contacted them in advance. I found out what their rates were. It's important to hire someone, I think, that has a rate list. Especially if this is one of your first or second times as a creator, you want to work with someone who's worked with other people before, understands the position that you're in, and understands what to expect with everything. So I got their rates, and I factored that into the budget. And a lot of them I added as kind of stretch goals. Say, you know, I could do the layout myself. It's going to take a long time. Or we could hire this person who's fantastic. They have some beautiful stuff, and it's going to be a much better product if I have this person on board. And so I would add those people. And incredibly, we hit all of our stretch goals, and I estimated the stretch goals maybe too low. I mean, all I did was add their rates mostly. So that's a little telling on there. But to get back to your original question, Kickstarter has like a calculator that you can use with limited functionality, just to give you a rough idea. You want to factor in the fees for everyone that you're working with. You want to factor in you know, shipping costs for stuff. And there's a whole checklist of things that you should get down. But at the end of the day, really, you need to overestimate a lot. Things are going to go wrong. They're going to go haywire. You're going to have to pay more for things. You want to try and not dig into your own pocket too much. With Seer Sanctum, I did overestimate, and I came very dangerously close to getting into the negatives on the Kickstarter. So I was like, okay, well, I'll add a bunch on top of this. And there's different suggestions on what you should do. And for this one, at least, it's worked out. I'm not in the red yet. And for me, my goal was to make something awesome, and this was a venue to do that. I want to be able to pay people that I think make great things and produce something that's incredible from like conception to out that people are holding. That's amazing to me. I'm not going to make a living off of this. I just want to make something cool.
Yeah, I had a similar discussion when I was speaking with Steven from Low Fantasy Gaming, and we were talking about, you know, that first instance where you get the first proof comes back to you into your house, and you see the physical product of something that you've created and what that must feel like. I imagine that's pretty cool. You mentioned something in there about the stretch goals, and that's something I see that sinks a lot of Kickstarters, because they create really big stretch goals or really elaborate ones. On your first one, you had one of the greatest stretch goals I saw, which I'm going to ask you to give me an example of here in a minute, in the terms of the dad jokes. So heads up, get one ready. But the second Kickstarter, you added in a physical item with the stickers and everything. How much of a organizational or planning, or how much overhead did that add in, going, oh, I've got to source now stickers from a different person that I got my zine printed from, and combining them and getting them all shipped out?
Just, I remember the days before launch, I'm like, oh man, did I factor in the weight here? Like, is this going to screw up? I had three stickers into a package. You know, is that going to change like the overall shipping? Is it going to bump me in another bracket? And I have to say, I didn't think of everything, because after the Kickstarter started, I'm like, oh wow, I didn't think I was going to get this many backers. Everyone's going to get a sticker. That's going to bump me into the next bracket of how many stickers I need to order. But thankfully enough people backed where it didn't make a difference. But like I said, overestimate. That stuff does come into play. I didn't do... So the dad jokes weren't a stretch goal, although that's a nice idea. I did something with the community copies so that folks could buy a bundle of joy, I called it, or back at a higher tier, and they could throw in some community copies in the pot that people could grab for free. There are still some available. Aberrant Reflections and Seer Sanctum are available on DriveThru and also Itch. And Itch allows you to give away a certain amount for free. So you can still grab those on there if you'd like. And they're for students and those in financial difficulties, no questions asked, you can go pick one up. And they were made available thanks to the generous backers who would provide that. And also they would get a dad joke, which was really fun for me. I came up with a lot of dad jokes for Aberrant Reflections. There were a lot of generous folk, which was a lot of fun. And we did so well, I got to make something else really cool, which wasn't part of the Kickstarter, but I thought it was really awesome. I made some postcards with some sweet art from Jacob Fleming on the front there and some lines there for Right Stuff. So I wrote them on there and I mailed them to everyone who gave me an address. So that was a lot of fun.
That's really cool. And the humor side of things is something that's kind of always come around with your Kickstarters. I think one of the things that kind of sets yours a little bit apart, or something that I know I said to you the first time that we met, and everybody who I've talked to that has seen your Kickstarters has commented that how much they love the video that you do with them. That the videos that you do kind of, it's what's kind of separates you apart a little bit from people who maybe don't know you, but are looking at a whole collection of zines and deciding who they're going to back. Where did the idea for that come from? Was that just something that, you've done videos before in the past and you thought it was good? Or was there a marketing tip that somebody said, hey, go make a funny video to work? Or how does that work out for you?
I had so little time with the Seer Sanctum, not only getting the campaign out, but also in my life, because my son, my firstborn, was born just in December, and I had such a busy schedule throughout the day. I was still getting used to everything, and I was like, I'm never gonna have time to make a video. I'm just gonna whip out my phone and I'm going to talk about this thing while I'm doing everything else. So you see me there doing laundry, you see me outside playing with the dog, and that worked. I had a bunch of bits of fragments of video here and there that when I was able to record, and then I was able to stitch them together, remove the parts where I'm repeating myself. And, luckily it showed enough of the product, why I was excited about it, and enough of my life and a little bit of my son and a little bit about me. And I think that helped. It was, I like funny stuff. So,
Yeah. Humor is an awesome, powerful tool, to get people on your side a little bit with things. I mentioned Steven earlier, when I was speaking with him, about his Kickstarters for Low Fantasy Gaming and stuff, he was saying that he was shocked at how many people purchased the product or backed the Kickstarter, I should say, simply by having seen it on Kickstarter, not having heard of it from him or no marketing, just like the natural people browsing through Kickstarter, finding the project and backing it. For him, it was, he said it was a vast majority, how he described it. Did you have a similar reaction to that, or was there a lot more marketing through zine quests and stuff that you found a bigger audience that way? Like, how do you feel that you got the majority of the backers coming in?
So Kickstarter inflates their referral numbers a little bit, but having said that, yes, a lot does come from the discoverability of Kickstarter. And that's what you're, That's what you're getting when you go with them as a crowdfunding platform. This was the first time that Zine Month happened, the beginning of 2022, because Kickstarter had moved ZineQuest, their official zine event, over to August. But even in the past, they really don't do a lot of community promotion. It's just the community itself, you know, the Discord, everyone banding together, promoting other people's projects at the bottom of theirs, highlighting stuff that they like. It's a whole big event, and it's really fun to be a part of as a creator and also, as a consumer. And that does help a bit. Everyone getting the word out and stuff in the community. The biggest thing that I've heard helps, and the biggest thing that I've seen help, is breaking out of your circle of influence. Because you can talk with the same people that you always do, but I mean, you're only going to talk to a limited number. It was a Dicebreaker article that broke for Aberrant Reflections that the majority of my backers came from. And so they do TTRPG news and board game news, and they got a whole bunch of different sections. But they broke it, and I had a unique spin on what the Kickstarter was, influence from Zelda, and they really latched on to that. And I had a press kit. So it's a promotional kit, and you can basically just copy from this kit. It was very easy. You make it extremely easy. I put quotes in there. It was Tony V, who's actually on the committee. I don't know if I should call it that, for Zine Month this year. But he's like doing a bunch of community stuff. And there's a workshop where he did on press kits, very useful. So I sent that over to Dicebreaker and a bunch of other editors and bloggers and stuff. And really it was Dicebreaker who was the one who responded, and they broke it. And that was the most influential. Tony V also has a list of contacts now for Zine Month 2023, who volunteered their info to be contacted. So it's not guaranteed that you're going to be featured in an article or anything, but these people have said, yes, I will, allow spam in a limited quantity from people trying to promote their projects. You might get bundled in like another, like a group post of like different projects and that such. So other things in promotion, I know you didn't specifically ask that, but you get to break out of your circle of influence. Reddit has been amazing. I'm so happy that I'm an active member in Reddit. They're wonderful people. I have loved them for years, Redditors. The OSR Reddit is fantastic. And things you need to look for are self-promotion rules on the subreddit, and people like to see things from creators who are active in the community, talk in the community, contribute to the community. If you spam your stuff, they're not going to like it. But people buy stuff on Reddit. The Bird site, not so much. I got maybe a few backers from Twitter. But yeah, Reddit, different subreddits too, and different communities that you might not expect to be interested in your game or rules. If you intersect another hobby, like I branched out and I said, hey, Zelda fans, here's a TTRPG, which was influenced heavily by Zelda. And some of those worked out, some of those got some positive feedback. The DCC subreddit, surprisingly enough, were like, this sounds crazy enough that I might be interested in this. You know, there was that.
If you're able to be weird enough that DCC is approving you, you've done something all right there. I agree with the whole cross-pollination. I'm also pretty active on the OSR subreddit. I think it's great. Another spot, although I'm not a huge fan of the site itself, for in terms of like my personal life is Facebook though. But on a from a gaming perspective, there are tons of really good Facebook groups of people of all areas. And just a suggestion possibly for you, I'm not sure, maybe you've already explored it, but what might fit in good with your style of things too, is if you find escape room subreddits or escape room groups and be like, hey, if you want to try an escape room type thing, here's a puzzle that might work for you.
I hadn't considered that, and I'm writing it down. I will write it down. That's fantastic. I've also considered doing advertising, because I think BackerKit does advertising now. So you supply them with some banners and stuff, but they'll do the footwork and they'll throw up the ads in different sites. And I've heard from Ian Usom, who did The Drain. You might recognize him. There's a funnel for Mothership, and also like this compilation Hull Breach, which I think recently fulfilled. The Kickstarter was like 500K. I think it got. And I think it was him who suggested BackerKit advertising. And it might be worth it if it's in your budget to do that. I'm not on Facebook. I believe you that it's a good group and community. I've heard that from other folks as well. Also something, I'll send you the link to it too. Ian Usom also did a workshop with Tony on crowdfunding basics, which is a very good video. And he goes through his process about his like launch day and what his preparation looked like. So it's very useful.
All right. So we've looked at it. We said, okay, you've got your product completed or close to completed. You've sat down and worked out the numbers. You've crunched the numbers. You've budgeted out. You figured out what stretch goals you're going to do. And you've done a bit of marketing and launched the Kickstarter. And it's a resounding success. You get funded, and now comes the reality of, okay, now I have to fulfill this thing. For somebody like yourself here on the last one, where you've got physical products and things are coming in, did you hire out to a company and send all the stuff to them and then have them mail it out? Or did everything come to your home and your wife was like, why are all these boxes in my house? Like, what? How did that work out for you?
Seer Sanctum, I had everything shipped to me. And I put in the time. I didn't get too many backers, though. I think it was 200, maybe, for physical. It might have even been less than that. I feel like it was less. It was probably like 100 physical backers. So it wasn't too bad for me to go on, fill everything out on pirate ship, slap everything together, grab the supplies, and move it through, carrying big old boxes to my post office and dropping them off. That was fine. For Aberrant Reflections, I was like, at the last minute, really, I was like, I probably am not capable of doing this one on my own. I think there's going to be a lot more backers. Because from the beginning, too, you get people who follow the project before launch. That's very important. And you can get those from any source, but Kickstarter, by the way, counts them as coming from them. That big button at the beginning, it's nice to have that at the beginning, because you get a lot of backers from that, the ones who originally followed, they're the most interested. So I was getting a lot more there. I was like, wow, okay. So last time it was maybe 30% of those backers who backed it. And it was this much smaller number. Now we'll look and say, okay, well, I probably need some help on this. So, again, from the Discord, the Zemo Discord, I reached out to Floating Chair Club, because they had said that they were available to do fulfillment. They have a great site, by the way. They sell zines and tchotchkes and all kinds of stuff on their site. And they were more than happy to talk through like some contracts with me. They took a look at the site and they're like, yeah, I think the shipping numbers should work out. And we worked out what made sense. So yeah, I'll be shipping some stuff directly from Mixum once I get the proofs back and, you know, they're looking good. Send them to Floating Chair Club, and then they're going to send them out to backers.
Awesome. I actually just realized that, yeah, there was two points with regards to marketing that I forgot to bring up with you. So what you kind of touched on it there is that Kickstarter has the whole, anybody who's backed you previously gets notified when a new one goes up. And I noticed that you had started up a newsletter on Substack. which I have as well. I want to know what your thoughts are on how the newsletter thing is working. Is how do you feel about that? And did you have a large number of return backers from the first Kickstarter to the second?
I did have a lot of return backers. I made sure to message them also with like a Kickstarter update. And I messaged the folks who had purchased on DriveThruRPG. You're not allowed to include links on your own in those emails, so you have to reach out directly to like the help on DTRPG's site, and then they will send out the email for you. You draft it, and they're like, okay, this is cool, but also you need to fulfill this Kickstarter with DriveThruRPG. So you gotta put their logo on there. It's not a huge deal, but it's really nice to have the emails of people who want information from you. So it's nice to have your own mailing list of people who have signed up for that. I have not posted anything to Substack yet because I've specifically said this is for updates on products that we are putting out or crowdfunding new stuff. And so my first update is going to be when the physical copies are available for purchase for AR. The digital copies are available now, but I've been thinking about what's going to be in the first post, and it's going to be everything that I've kind of released over the year. You know, there's going to be a couple of free things on there. But yeah, it's going to say you can get the physical copy now. And a bunch of people I think are waiting for that. And when I crowdfund again, which may not be on Kickstarter, I'm not sure, you know, I'll make that announcement there and we'll see how it goes. I'm very interested in BackerKit and see how they do, because they've released a beta for crowdfunding now, and they're going to go live soon, I think. I don't know when, but they have a bunch of Kickstarter users already. They have that user base. You don't need to sign up, which is the biggest blocker for crowdfunders, in my opinion, is that extra 10 minutes to sign up for an account. They have them. You have an account. You sign into BackerKit because it's a commonly used service that Kickstarter does not provide, which is very interesting to me. If they have the promotion aspect next, they'll be a very good competitor, I think.
Yeah, I'm really shocked that Kickstarter as an entity allowed BackerKit to piggyback off them for as long as they did and allowed them to grow without just buying them out. Like at a certain point, it was obvious of what utility BackerKit offers and you know why people are using it. It would have made sense a year or 2 years ago to be like, from Kickstarter's perspective, be like, okay, we're going to buy these guys and you know bring them into our envelope. Because otherwise, they're going to do exactly what you just mentioned, is they're eventually going to have enough of a customer base, enough of name recognition that they can spin up their own. And they're clearly going to probably cut the margins and the fees from what Kickstarter does. So yeah, I'm shocked that Kickstarter didn't see that coming, or maybe they did and BackerKit chose not to sell. That's always an option too, but...
They're such a big name. My guess is because they haven't really improved a lot of their tools over the years. The same bugs are there, and you know they prioritize different things, which is fine. And I hope that the competition does really well. I should also mention that Kickstarter is not available in every country. So some people can't actually crowdfund with Kickstarter, and there are alternatives. Just so far, Kickstarter has been the biggest draw in because of their discoverability. And like you said, people go to Kickstarter to look for Kickstarters to back.
Right.
There's also stuff called slow funding. Which is something completely different to wrap your head around. It's you crowdfund for a certain amount of time and then keep going. Like for the entire release, people get updates, and you know, the more money that you get, you know, you can add more things on there. You can continue to meet those stretch goals over the life of the project. The site I think that I'm thinking of is Cardboard Monster does slow funding. You can do itch funding too, but I will say that itch discoverability is really horrible. It's one of the worst for discoverability, but they have a great tool set for users. So there's that, and they genuinely seem to care about them. I hope that that it becomes a bigger platform. We'll see.
All right, so we've gone all the way up through now to fulfilling, and we've mailed out the boxes through our fulfillment partner, or managed to lug them down to the post office ourselves to drop them off. And our Kickstarter is closed, and everybody's happy, and you're kind of basking in the glory that you've pulled this off. This is a long journey, and you've got to complete. But now let's talk about the most sexy topic of all. Your bank account comes at the end, and you've now got to pay taxes, which is something I'm sure a lot of people forget about. How much of a business aspect afterwards of like just the general accounting of all this came in afterwards, and how did that, was that something you had experience with prior, or did you have to go and say, all right, I need to talk to somebody, make sure I do this right? Or
that is not something that I've had experience with before. I created a company, an LLC, for my publishing. It's called Direct Sun Group LLC. It's a group of one. but I registered in Washington State, which is where I live, with the Department of Revenue. And this is going to be different for wherever you live, and if you're in the US or if you're not in the US, and there's, I don't know everything. But I went on their site and I learned what I needed to do for Washington and what I needed to do for the state. Crowdfunding is something very specific in Washington, and they want you to pay taxes on it. And I had very specific questions on here, and the frequently asked questions were actually pretty good on there. I was like, well, what about my cost of, doing this and that? And they're like, well, you still need to pay taxes on that, 'cause that's the cost of doing business. So, if you have a question on that, they probably thought about it, and they're like, yeah, we want our cut.
Yeah.
You look it up. I also ask questions in the Zemo Discord, because there are other people from the US also who are looking into how to do that with their taxes. There's annoying things with it. Like for Washington, at least, you need to do it quarterly instead of yearly, which doesn't make too much sense for everybody, but I don't know. I'm veering off. It wasn't too hard to do that. It was just a little bit of a time sink looking into the taxes and stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's important to call it out, even if it's not difficult, is for people to remember, because I think there's a lot of folks that, because they don't operate businesses, yeah, maybe they're just doing this as a hobby, as something, yeah, fun.
Kickstarter does not take any taxes out. DriveThruRPG does not take any taxes out. You have to pay that.
Yeah. So, be safe, cover your butt on that sort of thing, and educate yourself where you can. If you don't have the time or the knowledge, find somebody that can help and give you some of that advice. All right. So we've completed all that. We're at the beginning of 2023 right now. Let's look back at 2022. Outside of your own products, what was the best Kickstarter that you touched, or product that you got over the course of 2022 via crowdfunding type manner?
Knock 3 came out. I love the Knock magazines. They're always my most used book on my my shelf. I love just picking them up and like, I haven't read Knock in a while. And I'm like, oh, I've never even read this article before. It always has some idea to get me excited. The Mary Mushman are fantastic. I think they came on Red Caps, didn't they?
Yeah, they were they've been on twice. They were just on here in December. We were talking about the new Bestry that came out, and we should be hearing from them sometime within the next probably 40 to 60 days about when Knock 4 will be coming out. So I'm eagerly awaiting that as well. That'll be an insta yeah, back for me.
They definitely know how to do it. They get everyone excited, and like they're 100% done before they start, and good stuff. I did not back the Bestiary, but I did back, and I heard good things about the Folklore Bestiary. I did back Skirple's Bestiary. I'm looking forward to
I'm so mad at myself on that one. Oh, so I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast. What happened with Skirple's one for me was So I love monster books, and if you put out a monster book, I'm probably going to buy your monster book. Just if anyway, who's listening who wants to get money from me, that's probably the best way to do it. But Scribbles launched his Kickstarter, and at the time I was waiting to see, you know, which level I want to do. So I backed at the $1 keep me in this Kickstarter level, which generally a lot of Kickstarters, if you've at least backed, you can always upgrade your pledge later on.
Yeah.
So I threw in the bid just so that I was on the list and I was planning on upgrading it at a later point. Lost track of it. Life was busy, blah, blah, blah. Kickstarter closes, but I don't have an option to update. It was just like a $1 donation, which is fine. I don't mind doing the $1 donation, but I was like, oh, you mean I can't get involved in the Kickstarter now? So I'm locked out of it. I contacted Scribbles and they're like, yeah, sorry. That's just kind of the way this one's set up.
No way. Really?
Yeah. So
I think I just got an email about pre-orders. I don't know. It may not have been pre-orders, but it was definitely the backer kit closing. Ah, shoot.
But yes, I will be, as soon as that becomes available as a retail option, I will be purchasing that one because it looks amazing. It's going to be a massive tome. So I can't wait to see that.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Let's see, Gig Economy, I also backed as part of Zemo. Very fun. Wonderful art, a bunch of retainers and stuff for you to use. Let's see. You're not a wizard, not being in parentheses. That's just a really fun concept to me. You're going to fake it in forever because you're never going to make it. But you have to get through Hogwarts basically without any magical abilities. That's just a really fun concept. And I absolutely love the art from there. And I don't have the artist off the top of my head. Who else? I think those were the biggest ones that I was really excited. I'm looking on my shelf here to see if any of them are poking out. Yeah.
The when you move from first Kickstarter to second Kickstarter, what do you think was the biggest lesson you learned in between there? And then before you do your third crowdfunding, whether it's Kickstarter or BackerKit or whomever else you may use, what's your biggest lesson going from the second to the third? Because I'm assuming there's going to be a third.
Yeah, there'll probably be a third. I'm not doing anything for Zine Month this year because probably still the biggest lesson two to three is that I want basically 100% before I launch the campaign. From one to two, I'd say getting in early was probably the biggest lesson. Contacting the people that I wanted to work with. And doing the advertising, the promotion for things, where to promote, who to contact, and the press kit. The press kit was a huge boon in terms of having somewhere to point people and saying, this is it. And just making it as easy for people who are promoting it to go and look and be like, oh, this thing. This is everything that I need to tell my users for.
So we said earlier that your puzzles, your dungeons, your products are generally all themed. They're very thematic. We know what the theme of the first two were because they're out and people have access to them. Are you able to drop a hint on what the theme might be for product number three whenever that may happen?
Yeah, probably more than a hint. I have been thinking about this for a while. I have not said it publicly anywhere, but I recently did a blog post where I talked about OSR style puzzles and why I thought they were fun. And I just wound up coming up with a bunch of examples for this. And I was like, wow, this could be pretty good. But you know, it needs to be play tested. It needs to be banged out a lot. It's still in the conceptual stages now, but sound, I'm kind of digging that now. So if you want spoilers, I don't know how much is actually going to be in the final product, but you can go check it out. And if you want to make your own puzzle dungeon, which I think that you definitely should, because I want to play it, and I'm selfish like that, you should go read the blog post and get some ideas there. Yeah, I think that would be neat. A sound kind of based dungeon. I had some ideas where you could have this like big lanky bell that that is available that maybe they could carry around because the tone of the bell incapacitates like a certain ooze which starts like flipping out. And I was wondering how you could drop hints that that is the way you do it. There's like purple flecks everywhere, and there's this solidified ooze that they leave around, which kind of dries up, which is also reactive to sound. So you throw that in there a little bit more. And I thought it would be neat to have a flying goat screecher thing that screeches around, which could also be another way to kind of get around the challenges. So, you know, you drop in different things for your players to interact with, lots of them, and lots of hints on what the theme is, and lots of opportunities for them to want to get past certain challenges. Like maybe that big old wall of goop amber is blocking a treasure room. They're like, how do we get in there? You can't bang through this. It takes too long to get with a chisel or a hammer or anything. This magical
right frequency,
fork.
Though.
Yes.
Yeah.
The right frequency. We're good. So I've been thinking about sound. Like I said, I don't know how much is going to be in there or when it's going to be. Maybe in August. I don't know.
Yeah, you could have a group that's kind of like Yamaha. If you've ever looked at Yamaha's logo, it's two tuning forks. Very few people actually realize that it's actually two tuning forks, since they were originally a piano company. But yeah, all of Yamaha's logos that have somebody who's got like a tuning fork for their logo or something on the front of the place and do things like that. That'd be very cool. I like that you're kind of keeping to the whole senses aspect and playing into the senses of the characters and how they're doing.
Yeah, I was trying to brainstorm some other themes too beyond senses. And I mean, because you have mirrors, you have the sight and stuff over there. And actually, I don't know why I brought that up. I don't have an example off the top of my head. Forget I said that.
All right. So we know kind of what maybe you're planning on doing for 2023. Is there, we talked about what projects or projects and products that came from 2022 that you like. Is there anything that's coming up in 2023? I mean, I think we both agree on Nock, but is there anything else that you know of coming up that you're like, people get excited about this and get ready for? Or is it just Zine Month in general that's coming up?
I think I'm most excited for Zine Month coming up. This is the first time that I'm not going to be, you know, a creator in there. So, I mean, it's always just fun looking at the promotion, the getting involved in the community and seeing and like congratulating people as they go on through. So I don't think there's any one thing in particular that I'm excited, which is going to like start crowdfunding or launch yet. But yeah, zinemonth.com I know is a great place to go check those out that are coming up. I don't think they've started putting any of those on there yet, but should be soon. And then the 1st of February, baby, that's when my wallet cries.
Before we started the recording, we were talking, you had mentioned that you had some stuff about Kickstarter that you wanted to chat about. I don't know if I've hit all the points that you're talking about, but was there anything else about Kickstarter and things that people should know as they're starting up one that you wanted to throw in that maybe I didn't think of and touch on?
I think we covered a lot of them. Something very specific, which I thought I should mention because it's come up not only from me, but another creator that I saw in their update, which is print versions of PDF versus digital versions of PDFs. Luckily, this wasn't a problem for me. Like, I didn't get back like a proof, which is this, and hopefully it works out fine. But I mean, I had to learn a little bit about RGB versus CMYK. So RGB is the color scheme that makes up what you can see on your digital screen. It's a lot brighter because there's a light source that you're staring at. And on the paper, you just can't get those colors. You can kind of tweak it, and maybe with some more expensive inks you can get a little bit brighter there. But since AR was the first product that I've released that has color that needs to be a certain color, there was a little bit of color in Seer Sanctum, but this color kind of features a little bit more prominently, specifically purple in this. which denotes what's in the aberrant universe, the parallel dimension. But I had to look at that and I had to pick a color, which I was happy with, looking at Mixum's website and stuff. So it's something to keep in mind, especially for Zine Month, since a lot of people do release the physical copies, is make sure all your files are in CMYK or RGB, your publishing files for Affinity, your digital files, they come from Photoshop, or your photo editing stuff. Being a project manager, estimate some time in for that. Because I was working just on my own for Seer Sanctum. And for AR, I had, cartographer, layout artist, 4 illustrators. I was only supposed to be 1, but wound up having 4 on the project. So that's 6 so far. Editor, Sam Sorensen, fantastic. So that's 7. And then if you count fulfillment, that's 8 contributors wrangling between each of them. There's a lot of overhead is the thing, because if I'm just messing around on my own, I could make small changes here and there. But really what I needed to do was compile a list of changes in a document to try and make things as easy as possible and say, here's a list of changes. Like, okay, here's the edits. Go look at them again. Talking with people really helps, and it's important that you get on a video chat or you get on the phone call with them. That was very important. I still think communication is key with that as well. So a lot of time invested in that. So factor that in. You're not only going to take on the role of creative direction, maybe writer, but also project manager. And it's all on you. You own the project. You're the one who cares about it the most, really. It's your baby.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody else is going to care about it anywhere close to how much you do. So make sure you're keeping on top of it. You did mention one thing that I think is probably a good thing to point out to folks that maybe don't know, or they're just looking at it, is the tools that you're using. A lot of people default to Adobe products, but if that can bump people out of their own price ranges at times. Adobe, there is a monthly subscription, so you could just sign up for it during the time that you needed to use it. But you mentioned Affinity. I highly recommend their products for what most people need. The Affinity products will do everything fantastically. And there's also open source free software that'll do a lot of this as well. It's just maybe not as easy to find tutorials on as much as you would find maybe Affinity and Adobe products. But yeah, make sure that your tools aren't slowing you down, and don't spend a bunch of time jumping between tools because you heard that this other tool is great. I think just getting stuff done is probably the most important.
Affinity is cheaper. I like their model, and I like Affinity Publisher better than Adobe InDesign. So don't do anything because other people told you to do it, but go get Affinity.
Yeah. Don't do things because people tell you, but we both tell you to get Affinity, so you should listen to us. All right. I would like one of those dad jokes, please. Give me your best dad joke for the day.
All right. Okay. So I don't always tell dad jokes, but when I do, he laughs.
Nice. All right. So I know you've listened to the podcast before. I'm assuming you prep something for the question that you know has to be coming. And that is, what have I not asked you, or what has other people not asked you at the end of an interview that you're like, man, I really wanted to talk about this and nobody ever gave me the opportunity. Chris, what did I not ask you that I should have asked?
I did prep for this question. I'm a big fan of your podcast, and I am a little surprised. And no one asked me why the name of the company is Direct Sun and why my username has been Direct Sun. Ooh. So ask me.
One second. I gotta think if I can come up with a thought on why. Now you do spell it S-U-N, so it's not due to your son. So Direct Sun. I'm drawing a blank. Okay. Direct Sun. Why do you call yourself Direct Sun?
So back in the dark ages, when I had first gotten online via America tools, America Online, you know, you needed to come up with a username, and that was the most grueling and intensive process. I was there with my dad, and he's like, "All right, well, how about this? Well, that's taken this." And so I would make a lot of movies with my dad. I would direct, write, and star in these movies. And my dad is a shutterbug, and you know, he loves film and stuff. So I would wrangle in all my cousins and friends and stuff. We'd make some movies, and bless his soul, he, you know, took all my directions and he put up with me, and we came out with some great stuff that we still watch to this day. I'll just drop a few things in there. The Ghost from the Deep. And Night of the Living Dummy, you know, you kind of
get the... I see where the dad there. Joke love comes from. Gotcha.
So he's like, how about direct son? Because you direct those movies, you're part of this thing. And S-O-N, because you're my son, basically, right? So it was S-O-N for a good while. And then eventually it morphed into S-U-N because usernames were taken elsewhere, and that's it. It's direct.
Well, I wasn't that far off, when instead of it being your son, it was your father's son, and you Indeed. Were the son in the quote.
The cycle continues.
And I see now where maybe some of the skills for said videos are coming from for the Kickstarter as well. You've had a lifetime of practicing on for those.
So drama and acting and stuff has had a big influence and has played a big part in my life growing up. And that's kind of fallen by the wayside in my adult years, I would say. I like acting. I like theater. And that's been fun. Yeah, so that's a part of my history, and it's always a part of me. Yes.
Is there a spot where if folks wanted to see some of these, have you put any of these older videos online? And would you ever put any of these videos online if you've not?
No, they are not online. They're available to my family, but that's it. I don't think that I ever would. They're way too embarrassing.
Those are the best kind, though. All right. Well, hopefully you're able to incorporate that more. If it's in marketing or if it's just in a different creative endeavor, and bring some of that back. Cause like I said, everybody who I've talked to, who've seen your Kickstarters rave about the video. So I'm sure if it was something that you were able to, you know, dedicate a really scripted thing to, you'd knock it out of the park. Hopefully you're able to envelop both sides of this hobby, or passions that you have.
An interesting thing about the Kickstarter videos, which I don't think I mentioned yet, Kickstarter says that a lot of successful campaigns have a video, right? They have this statistic on there. And so a lot of people try and have a video, and sometimes it's just like the image and maybe like a flash here, some text and maybe some music and stuff. But you know, I always thought it was interesting and useful to have someone talking about what they liked and they thought about it and how they enjoyed it. The thing is, though, a lot of people, like they show you the stats here, a lot of people stop watching after the first 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. So you either need to draw them in those first 30 seconds and get them engaged, they finish it, or make a 30-second video, which is amazing. So there's a huge challenge there. With the last video, I tried to keep it super short. And it's hard to get in all the information that you want in that amount of time, but it's creative. Restrictive challenge there.
I during December, whenever I kind of had a little bit of a break, so I had all the podcasts kind of recorded and they were being time released throughout December, so I can kind of take a break and sit back. I tried making a YouTube short, so 60 seconds, double the length of what you were just talking about, and trying to get I went through using OSE and created a magical sword, a sentient sword. Trying to get all the rules for how to create a sentient sword and actually do it and display it in 60 seconds. I was like, this should be no problem. That was, I mean, it got done. It happened, but I was like, wow, that was a lot rougher than I thought it would be. It was a lot more edits and a lot more like, okay, well, I need to trim this by another. little bit. Yeah, having a very tight constraint really kind of focuses on what you're doing. And maybe that's a good thing for everything. Like maybe have a constraint on page count and stuff like that when you're writing something as well.
Yeah, I hear that definitely helps.
But all right, sir. Well, thank you very much for coming on. It was awesome to have you back. And the education you kind of provided here, at least for me, there may be people that are much smarter than I am that have been listening to this and they're like, this is old hack. Or there's people that are like, oh, that's exactly what I needed to get started. I'm going to ask you, if you can, to provide me a bunch of links. You gave out a bunch of cool sources of where you've got some help, and we'll put all those down in the description for people to go and look at. And
you got it.
If anybody's interested, like we said, February is the start of Zine Quest. Before, if somebody was going to jump in, or sorry, Zine Quest, Zine Month, I keep calling it Zine Quest because it's just the name that's in my head.
Zine Quest is also launching at the same time.
Oh, are they both starting at the same time? I thought one was in the summer this time.
Oh, so they changed it back. They're like, we screwed up, guys. We're going to change it back to February. So Zine Month and Zine Quest are going at the same time. And even if you launch on Kickstarter, you can keep, because Kickstarter, Zine Quest, that's their thing. But you can hang out with Zine Month. You can chat with everyone. And they'll still try and promote other crowdfunding platforms over Kickstarter, but they'll still promote your stuff too. And you can still engage in the community. And I highly suggest that you do that. There's plenty of workshops, great community. Last year was fantastic. This year they got some great infrastructure and they're doing things a little bit earlier. I think it's going to be great. Go check out the Discord and the site.
Awesome. And if everybody wants to find you, where do they go to find Direct Sun and all the things that you're doing and updates for the future?
Yeah. So you can grab some stuff at directsungames.com. You can check out the blog at blog.directsungames.com. You can check me out on Mastodon. I'm not so much on the bird site anymore, but Mastodon, I'm Direct Sun at, dice.camp. That's right. Yeah. At Direct Sun at dice.camp. That's me. Let's see. I mean, you can get Aberrant Reflections right now, the digital version, at aberrantreflections.com, and Seer Sanctum at seersanctum.com. They're also available on DriveThruRPG. If you are not good spelling things the way that I say that they should be spelled.
And is there a difference? You had mentioned Itch before. I don't know. Are you selling on Itch as well?
I am. I'm selling on Itch.
Is there a difference for you in terms of which place somebody purchases from in terms of the cut? I know, I think Itch typically gives a better cut, right?
Yes, you can select the cut that Itch gets. By default, it's 10%. You cannot select the cut really and make a significant difference at DriveThruRPG. It's 65% usually. They will take 70% if you let them. So you get 65%, right? So I got that backwards. But they will give you 70% if you decide to only digitally sell on their website, which I don't do. I recommend you do 65%. You want autonomy over your digital copies. But discoverability is the biggest thing on DriveThruRPG. Same with Kickstarter. Most of the sales are on DriveThruRPG. And, you know, they have the deal of the day, which is the biggest thing, which I've never been able to afford. It's based on... it's a whole weird thing that I don't have time to get into. But their newsletters and stuff are really great. I mean, I should actually mention something else now that I think about it.
We're not on time. Let me go ahead.
So I said promotion of your stuff and breaking out of your circles is a really big thing. So newsletters, very important to have, but get on other people's newsletters too. So remember what I said, that I don't put any banners on the products. I say it's BX compatible, but I don't throw the OSE symbol on there. And I do that very stubbornly. I beat myself up about it every time. And the only reason
Gavin has a great newsletter that he does.
He does. I wish that I was on there, but I don't use his third party license. And I don't do it because of the text that he requires in the book, which is this game requires old school essentials to run. And I know what other people do. I know that the text immediately following that is, or you can just use whatever you want. It's fine. I I have it in my head that I shouldn't have to put in that one line, and it's it's really come back to bite me, because if I stuck the OSE label on there, I feel like I would reach a much bigger audience and people would be able to see that and know that it's there. So I don't know. I'll continue to kick myself in the butt for a little while.
The other person you should, I know he gets swarmed with people sending him stuff. But of course, Ben over at Questing Beast, if you can get onto his newsletter, that has a massive reach as well. But I'm sure he is just utterly buried, especially this time of year, with people trying to get his attention. So
Ben's channel, Questing Beast, is how I came about the OSR. I had a fantastic influence with him, and he's actually the reason why I decided to make the Seer Sanctum publicly available and publish it. I was like, I could do this. I want to get on this channel. I still have that goal. I mean, I've met a mini goal there. He did feature the Seer Sanctum in like a group zine video, but it did not get a solo video. I'm hoping with AR, it gets Aberrant Reflections, it gets a solo video. I'm both fingers crossed here.
Well, I'm hoping for that too. That would be pretty cool. I'd like to see that. I watch all of Ben's videos as well. He has cost me more money than I would care to admit. But yes, thank you for coming on, Chris. I will include as many links as we can down below, and folks, definitely pick up both products. If you can, pick them up from Itch, just because it's a better cup. But if you have a hard time finding them, DriveThruRPG has great discoverability, so definitely go there as well. Yeah, Chris, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we can have you back again soon once we know a little bit more about what the next product is going to be, and we'll go
from there. It has been so much fun being on the Red Caps podcast, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me. It is always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to send this to Future Me for some editing, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Chris, for coming on to the episode. It was a lot of fun chatting with you, and I hope all the listeners are coming away from this episode with some more information about how to run a Kickstarter and a sense of, I can do that. That was what I was really hoping, was that I could put out some of this information for people who have never done it before and give them a little bit of confidence that it can be done, and arm them with a whole bunch of information. So if you look down in the description of the podcast, there should be oodles and oodles of links. Chris was a fantastic guest in that both we had this awesome conversation, but then he also provided me with a ton of links to help all of you out through your Kickstarter journey. And I hope you go on that journey and ping me when you do, and I will back your Kickstarter. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Red Caps Podcast. I hope you enjoyed, you learned something, and that you were eager to come back for more. www.theredcaps.net has all the links to all the ways to contact me, and I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very so much for listening, and remember, never let your caps dry out. Stay safe, have fun. We'll talk again soon.